I was asked to announce that tonight's Divrei Torah are said the Ilui Mas, the mother of Mr. Fred Shulman, Malka Bas Yosef. She should have a tremendous aliyah to Shama, not only from the Divrei Torah tonight, but also from her wonderful family. In the days of Sfira, we know that the minhag is, even when we have a Shabbos Mevarchim, let's say, and generally during the year, we would not recite Avar Rachamim on such a Shabbos. We know that during the days of Sfira, when we have a Shabbos Mevarchim, the minhag in, I think, most shuls is that you say Avar Rachamim. And the reason for that being that we had many, many years ago in the 1600s, there was the Gzeres Tach V'Tach, 1648-1649. And that is the reason why, since this tremendous, tremendous massacre of Klal Yisrael occurred during the Yemei HaSfira, that is why we do not take out Avar Rachamim from the davening during these weeks. And this is why we have, according to many, we have a very serious type of Avelis during Sfira as well. This is why we take this time very seriously. So just a little historical background into what happened in the Gzeres Tach V'Tach, and then we'll get into some Dvar Halacha about that. 1648-1649 is the English date of when the Gzeres Tach V'Tach happened. It was 5408-5409, Tach V'Tach, we all know in Hebrew. So someone yesterday was telling me, he was trying to look it up on the internet, he put in Tav Chaf, and then he was trying to figure out what's Tat, what is that, Tav Tav, had it go on for so long? So the answer is Tav Ches and Tav Tes. It's 1648-1649, so that's the way you can find it if anyone's interested in looking into it. So after the Spanish Inquisition in 1492, so a lot of the Svartische part of Judaism, of Jewry, was really wiped out in the Spanish Inquisition, and most of the mainstream religious observance moved to Eastern Europe. Now, came many years later, 150 years later, in 1648, is when it came the time for this terrible massacre that happened in the eastern part of Europe, which was to the Ashkenazi community. It was interesting that the Mekubalim at the time told everybody that in 1648 there was going to be a terrible destruction that will befall Klal Yisrael, and everyone assumed, for some reason, that that means Mechemes Gog U'Magog, and right after Mechemes Gog U'Magog will be the coming of Mashiach, which is why we find, right after the story of Tzeres Tach V'Tach, Shabsai Tzvi pops onto the scene, with the whole history that came along with him, but he came onto the scene right after the closing of the Tzeres Tach V'Tach. It was interesting. So basically what happened was, people were under the assumption, they were under the impression that something terrible was going to happen, which was Mechemes Gog U'Magog, and they were terribly mistaken. What happened was, in 1648, the person by the name of, the infamous personality by the name of Chmielnicki came along and decided to make a revolt against the Polish government, and he made a massacre against the Jewish people. When he did that, he killed 100,000 Jews. Between the years 1648 and 1650, he killed 100,000 Jews. So now, post-Holocaust era, we think about that number and we say 100,000 Jews is not as much as we're used to hearing about from the Holocaust, but when you think about it, when 100,000 Jews are killed and there's no sort of mechanism of mass murder, it means that he went around actually killing 100,000 people with his own two hands, I mean with his army. It's a very frightening thing. So this, for many, many generations in Europe, was considered the greatest tragedy in all of the years of Klal Yisrael and Galus, and that's why it was taken very, very seriously. Some of the very important people that were killed at that time in the Gzeres Tach V'Tach were the Rebbe of the Shach, the Rebbe of Heschel, as we know. Interesting, he had two Talmidim. One was the Taz and one was the Shach. Both wrote commentaries on Shulchan Aruch. Shach was 50 years younger than the Taz, but they were both Talmidim of the same person. Interesting, I don't know how that worked out. It's the way it goes. So that, he was one person. The father of the Chacham Tzvi as well was killed. Many others, the Shari Ephraim was also killed at the time. It's very interesting. So Rabbi Wein, I saw, pointed out that there are three very interesting things that came out of Gzeres Tach V'Tach, aside from the terrible massacre and the destruction of Klal Yisrael, three very interesting historical facts that came out of it. One was the fact that there was the rise of Shabsai Tzvi and a very messianic feeling at the time, because people were in despair and people were under the impression that Mashiach was going to come after Mechemes Gog U'Magog, so they assumed that Shabsai Tzvi must be the Mashiach. So that's how he came to play. Number two, a very interesting historical point is that in the 1500s, when Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote the Shulchan Aruch, so there was a big, big controversy around the printing of the Shulchan Aruch. It wasn't so simple. The Marshal actually writes in his Akdama that he wasn't so happy with it. The Shach writes in his Akdama that the reason why he's, the Shach wrote a sefer, I don't know if anyone knows, called Gurus Hanashim. So he attacks the Shulchan Aruch, that the Shulchan Aruch spends one little simon all that Gurus Hanashim. He says, I'm going to show you, I have a whole sefer to show that the Shulchan Aruch made a mistake. And he prints a whole kuntres to show that he's disagreeing with the Shulchan Aruch. The reason why all this happened was because there was a lot of opposition to the printing of the Shulchan Aruch. One of those being that people said it's going to destruct the future, it's going to destroy the future of rabbinic authority. Because now, who needs the rabbi anymore? I have an easy Shulchan Aruch, I'll open it up, I'll find the psak on my own. What do I need the rabbi for? So some people were very concerned that the Shulchan Aruch is going to ruin the structure of Jewish society, of Jewish life. People used to go to a rav for different things, and now no one's going to need the rav anymore. That was one issue people had. Other issues people had was that no one's going to learn Be'in anymore, because now you don't need to look up the Rishonim, you don't need to work through it. Shulchan Aruch worked through it already and told us what's important and what's not. So why do I need to learn Rishonim? I'll just look in the Shulchan Aruch, I'll find out what I need to know, and that's it. So that's why many people were very opposed to the Shulchan Aruch.
Gemara, a lot of people saying that's
right. Same type of concern. So it's very fascinating that we take the Shulchan Aruch for granted that this is, you know, the Ein B'Yisrael for Pesach Halacha. That's what everyone bases themselves off, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, which is a whole story in itself. Who came first? The Ramah writes in his Akdamah to the Darkei Moshe that he had the idea first. He wanted to print the Shulchan Aruch, and then the Rabbi Yosef Karo beat him to it. So then he decided he's going to concede, and he'll just write comments on the Shulchan Aruch. Interesting. But anyway, so there was a big, big machlokes about whether or not the Shulchan Aruch should be printed, and the Rabbi Yosef Karo printed it. And then history told us that this was one of the most significant pieces of history that was very important at the time, because all the yeshivas closed down in 1648, the Rabbanim were killed out, there was no one around anymore, and all the Balabatim in their own homes had to know what to do, and everyone used the Shulchan Aruch. It's for that reason that the Shach and the Taz wrote their commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, because at the time, that was the predominant sefer that everyone was using. Chumash doesn't help me when I don't have a rav to go ask a shayla to. So that's what everyone was using. It's interesting that that's one of the things that came out of Gzeres Tachlatat that they point out. Another thing was very interesting as well, that in the early 1500s, after the Spanish Inquisition in 1492, a lot of people said, mistakenly, they had no idea what was really going on in Spain, but a lot of Ashkenazim said that the Sephardim, it was a punishment that they deserved because they were too integrated into the Spanish culture and they weren't careful about intermarriage and everything. So the Ashkenazim, it created a tremendous rift between Ashkenazim and Sephardim after the Spanish Inquisition. It wasn't until 150 years later, in 1648, when the Ashkenazim were hit with also a tremendous massacre, and then they realized that not always is it the fault of a community, and the Sephardim obviously were not at fault either. Sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam decides to punish, you know, Klal Yisrael, and he chooses certain parts of Klal Yisrael to be punished, and this brought together Ashkenazim and Sephardim afterward, because they both realized that sometimes each community gets punished on their own. And it's not always always our job to be pointing fingers at each other and deciding who's right and who's wrong. In 1650, the Vada Abraha Ratzos, who was basically like the Agudas Yisrael of Europe at the time, they got together all the Rabbanim, the consensus of the Rabbanim from all of that part of Europe. So they got together and decided, you know, we're going to make a day every single year to commemorate this terrible atrocity that was done in the Gzeres Tachlatat, and they decided that Chaf Sivan, in 1 month, we're going to get to that, they decided that Chaf Sivan should be a day of Tainus and Slichos, and as we know, the Shach wrote a whole kuntris about which Slichos should be recited and which types of personality should fast. So there was a whole discussion about this. So when we think about that, you know, in modern literature, there was the same story. Rav Moshe writes in Chelek Ches, they quote from Rav Moshe in Chelek Ches, Igros Moshe, I don't know what the story is with it, but they write in there that Rav Moshe said that after the Holocaust, the same question arose. Should we be making one specific day where we should fast and we should say Slichos because of the terrible thing that happened to Klal Yisrael? Should we make such a thing? So Rav Moshe is quoted as saying, my father says, it's also from Soloveitchik, that the consensus was that you should not make a separate day for the Holocaust. Why? Because since the Holocaust was an atrocity that was done against all of Klal Yisrael, it wasn't against one specific sect of Klal Yisrael on their own. It was against everybody that existed, anyone that Hitler was able to find. So that's included in our Avelos on Tisha B'Av, that we mourn for all the gullus of Klal Yisrael and all the terrible things that happened to the whole of Klal Yisrael. So this is included, and there's no reason, in one of the kinnos we say on Tisha B'Av, we say that there's no reason to add another day of Avel. So this is included. But Gzeres Tachlatat, which was only on a certain segment of Klal Yisrael, it killed out 100,000 people. So the Shach felt that over there we should institute a separate day, and that's why in Chaf Sivan he decided together with the Vada Abraha Ratzos that should be the day designated for Slichos and for Atinus. So the question is, do we have a right to make such a Yom Tainus? Just so happens to be nowadays, most of us do not have the practice to do anything on Chaf Sivan or to say Slichos. I don't know in this shul, but I assume not. Right? I assume they don't say slichos. Many shuls do not say slichos anymore. So it happens to be the minig fell by the wayside. But basically, this was a very serious minig that was instituted way back when in the days of the shach in the 1650s. And it carried on for many, many years in Europe. So that's a question. Do we have a right to institute such a day? Does that constitute a violation of Baal Tosef or not? Which is the same question when Eretz Yisrael was established and people want to make a day to commemorate the establishment of Eretz Yisrael. We decided it's going to be Hay Year, which is a whole discussion how they came up with that also, and whether they should have such a day or not. That was a big controversy as well. Is this a violation of the Israel Baal Tosef? Do we have a right to add Yom Tovim or to add Yumei Avelis on our own? Maybe we should say that the only time we are allowed to celebrate or we're allowed to have a day of Avelis is on the day where the Torah told us, the Torah prescribed such a thing, or the Nevi'im told us such a thing, but how do we have a right to make something on our own? That's the serious question. So when we look into the sugya of Baal Tosef, we find two different mitzvahs that we have about Tosef, or Isurim, I should say. One is in Parshas Vaeschanan, one is repeated in Parshas Re'eh. So in Parshas Vaeschanan it says, V'lashon Rabim, if we look carefully, it says, Lo sosifu al adavar asher anochi mitzavcha eschem, lo sigru u'mimenu. The psukim tell us, Lo sosifu, v'lo sigru u, means you collectively should not. That's one pasuk. In Parshas Re'eh, we find in the singular, the pasuk tells us, Eskal adavar asher anochi mitzavcha eschem ayom, tishmu lasos, then the pasuk says, Lo sosifu ala v'lo sigru u'mimenu. So the Achronim will pick up, what do we need the two psukim for? Why do we need one pasuk that says B'lashon Rabim? Why do we need one pasuk that tells us Baal Tosef B'lashon Yachid? What's the difference? So the Netziv and many other Achronim write the same thing. The Bir Agra has this as well in Adaras Eliyahu, that one pasuk is coming to tell me on each person in Klal Yisrael. For example, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah writes that if a Kohen gets up and he does Birchas Kohanim and he decides, instead of just saying the three simple psukim that the Torah prescribes for Birchas Kohanim, he decides to add a fourth pasuk. I love Klal Yisrael so much, I want to give him another bracha. Says the Gemara, that's a violation of Baal Tosef. That's the Isur Deraisa. So there says the Netziv and other Acharonim, that's why the pasuk says, Lo Sosifu, it's a collective Isur on everyone in Klal Yisrael. No one is allowed to add in their Shmiras HaMitzvos. Another example the Gemara gives is, a person decides he's not happy with the Dalad Minim, he's going to add a rose this year. He thinks the rose is pretty, he wants to add a fifth min onto his Dalad Minim. He wants to add a fifth parsha into his tefillin. So all those examples, the Gemara tells us, are a violation of Baal Tosef, and that's why the pasuk says Lo Sosifu in the Lashon Rabim, that the collective Klal Yisrael is not allowed to add on to any mitzvahs or to the Yisurim. There's a second Isur which we find is Lo Baal Tosef, which is in the Lashon Yachid, which the Rambam writes. What is that? That's the Isur on the Bezin. What exactly is the Isur on the Bezin? So if you look in the Rambam Perek Beis Halacha Tes of Ilchas Mamrim, the Rambam formulates the Isur as follows. He says that a Bezdin in every generation has the right to make Zeris and to make Harchakas and to let us know that there are certain things we should stay away from because we might lead ourselves to violate an Isur D'Oraisa. Says the Rambam, Bezdin has to be extremely careful when setting up such Zeris and Harchakas because Bezdin has to be sure that they let everybody know that this is only a Takana D'Rabbanan, this is only a Zerim D'Rabbanan. If Bezdin were to pass a law and make pretend like it's an Isur D'Oraisa, that would constitute an Isser of Baal Tosef on the level of D'Oraisa. That's what the Rambam says. Therefore, says the Rambam, we know that Basar of Bechalav is really Mutter Mid'Oraisa. We know that you're allowed to eat chicken and milk Mid'Oraisa. Right? Everybody knows that. Losavasho Gadli Bechalav Imam means only meat and milk. If I have chicken and milk, is Mutter. Came the Chacham and said, we're concerned that if you eat chicken and milk, you're going to come to eat meat and milk next week. So therefore, says the Rambam, the Chacham have to be very careful when they're setting up that Isser to let us know that is only an Isur D'Rabbanan, and it's not on the same level as an Isur D'Oraisa. If the Chachamim would make pretend like it's a real Isur D'Oraisa, they would violate the Isur of Baal Tosef. So the question begs itself that the Ramban writes on Chumash Parshas Vaeschanan as well, that not only do the Chachamim have to set it up that way, they have to, even the individual who's accepting upon himself to listen to the Chachamim also has to make sure he knows that he's only doing an Isur D'Rabbanan, or he's only fulfilling a mitzvah mid'rabbanan, and he's not fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa. Everyone has to be sure to know that. So that's the question over here. How did the Chacham have a right? How did the Vada Abra HaRatzis have a right to make up a yontif? The Ramban writes that making up your own yontif also violates Baal Tosef. So how did they have the right to make a Yom Evel, or to make a yontif of Chab Sivan or Heir? How do we have a right to do such a thing?
This was the best thing. The 1600s,
what do you mean? But how did the Chacham get together and make some new takana? Right, sure. So that's the question. And even that's not allowed. Right, so that's the question. So it's interesting that along these lines, the Rabbi Avadia writes in a tshuva in the Elam Chelak Vav in Chavidas, he writes about Sfiras HaOmer, which is interesting, that we say the Nusach of L'Shem Yichud, and people who say it recite, Hinni Muchan Umzichon Umzuman L'Kayim Mitzvah Sesei Shal Sfiras HaOmer K'mo Shekasa B'Torah. Nowadays, we assume Sfiras only the Rabbanan. So ask Rabbi Avadia, how are we allowed to say that Nusach? According to the Rambam, we're violating the Issur D'Oraisa of Baal Tosef. How are we allowed to do that? So Rabbi Avadia writes, you have to tweak the Lashon a little bit, say it a little differently. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman says, what do you mean? This is the paragraph for centuries already. We all say it, and Sfiras HaOmer has always been the Rabbanan. Says Rabbi Shlomo Zalman has a hard time getting out of it as well. He says you can keep the same Nusach, but have in mind that you're only being Mekayim and Mitzvah D'Rabbanan. Not just a simple issue. It's not so simple. So that's the question over here. How do you have a right to do it? The Chinuch writes in Mitzvah Tafnun Dalid. Interestingly enough, he says, what's the Yisod? What's behind the Isser of Baal Tosef? Says the Chinuch, because the Ribbono Shalom gave us a Torah Shleima. He made sure that everything was perfect. And you have the chutzpah to come along and tell me that there's something missing. You decided you need to add another mitzvah because it's not enough. You think the Ribbono Shalom's Torah is not complete. Therefore, says the Chinuch, that's why a person may not add onto the mitzvah HaTorah. Says the Minchas Chinuch, therefore, it would follow that if a circumstance comes up later on in history, for example, I was saved from a terrible tragedy, or if a tragedy comes upon the community and now we feel it's befitting to make some sort of commemoration to that, so we would be allowed to. Why? Because that circumstance did not exist in the times of the giving of the Torah. So therefore, says the Minchas Chinuch, along the lines of the Chinuch himself, that a person would be allowed to institute a yontif later on if it was for a circumstance that came up later on. A person who experienced some sort of great simcha, or a person's anniversary. So he wants to make a party every year for all his generations. So according to the Menchas Chinuch, he assumes it's that would be mutter. Many Acharonim feel that the Menchas Chinuch is not correct from a Gemara Rosh Hashanah Yudches. We won't get into it. So what exactly are the Heterim for making such a Yantip Bizman Hazeh, or making such a Yom Evil Bizman Hazeh? What's the Heter? So Rav Herzog has in a tshuva in Heichel Yitzchak a couple of ideas. One is that if the Chacham of the time want to set up a Yantif, but they're not making it L'doros. They're only making it Adimos HaMashiach, for example, Chav Sivan. That wasn't made to be something forever. It was only till Mashiach would come. So he says that might not violate the Isser of Baal Tosef, because you're not making a new mitzvah that should be in a continuous fashion for the rest of the history of the world. That's one idea that he says. Another idea he says, that to institute a Yom Evil, a Yom Tainus, would not constitute Baal Tosef, because as the Rambam writes in the beginning of Hilchas Tainus, the reason for making a Tainus is a Yom Tshuva. So what's so bad if we want to institute another Yom Tshuva? We want to give ourselves another opportunity to do Tshuva. What's so bad about that? So therefore you suggest that maybe when it comes to making a Yantif, that's questionable. When it comes to making a Yom Evil, that doesn't seem like it's so hard to swallow. A third idea that my father told me is that the Magen Avraham writes in Simet Tafresh Pei Vav, Vishrem, the Maram Al Shakar, that if a person only institutes it like the Tosis Yantif we know wrote in his Tava, that all his future generations should keep some sort of Yantif on a specific day because he was saved from some terrible tragedy. So some Achronim want to say, the Magen Avraham quotes from earlier Achronim, that if you're only instituting it for your generations and you're not making it for Gantz Klal Yisrael, so then there's no reason to be concerned about Baal Tosif, because you're not really adding on to the Mitzvah HaTorah. You're just saying that your family should try to have this Hanhaga to commemorate this wonderful event. So that's just a brief synopsis about some of the history and halacha behind the times of Tafatat, which happened in this period of time. But it's obviously a time of introspection and a time to take seriously and think about the atrocities that actually took place in this period of time.